Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So this traverse, for example, against the ice we were talking about, before accessing to the friendo, it's for sure a mental game and experience game, because you know, like, okay, it's super easy, I can cross there, it's just 2 meters of ice, I just get some speed, put my board flat, wait, and then I know, like, just before it's going to be good snow, I will be able to stop. So you need to go fast to be able to cross easy. Because if you go slow and you slip on the ice, then you just fall down on a crazy couloir full of ice, which it's death for sure, like 500%. And there's as well the fact of telling yourself, yeah, for sure, it goes. I've done it already. No big deal. Stay calm and do it.
He is described as one of the most creative and courageous writers of today, and as he came to town to present his new movie project, Frozen Mind, together with The North Face, I got the chance to sit down in the studio with French snowboarder Victor Delerue. My name is Magnus Ormestad, and this is episode 27 of the international series of the Swedish outdoor podcast Husky. Husky is made possible thanks to Naturkompaniet. If you want to know more about this episode and the previous ones, please head over to huskypodcast.com or find me on Facebook and Instagram at the handle huskypodcast.
So where is home to you?
Home to me is home to me is in southwest of France, in Cabreton, next to Hossegor and Biarritz. But in the winter, I live in the Alps, in Val Thorens. I rent an apartment there with my girlfriend, and from there I ride, I train, and then I travel to my shooting destinations or to competitions.
You live the classic dirt bag life out of a duffel bag sometimes.
Exactly. Yeah.
But is that where you grew up? Close to the ocean?
No, I grew up in the Pyrenees, like a half hour from Spain, in a resort called Saint-Lary. And so I grew up riding there, being in the snowboard club, the Brown Bears. And from there, I did competitions, and then I got some sponsors, and then I kept on going, and then had to choose between competitions of border cross and freestyle or filming, and I liked filming most, and producing footage, pictures, videos, making movies, and so this is... And then I kept on doing this for a bunch of years, for 10 years so far.
And now if someone... flying over to Stockholm, for instance, and if you sit talking to someone next to you and they ask you, so what do you do for a living? What do you answer then? Do you tell them that you're a snowboarder?
Yeah. Before I had trouble to say I'm a snowboarder. It felt kind of weird, but now I've been doing this for so many years. So yeah, I say I'm a snowboarder and I work for it and I live through it. And yeah, that's... Everything is around that.
Yeah. What about growing up? Because you're not the only one in your family that have some skills on the snowboard. You have three or four older brothers and sisters.
Yeah.
You're the youngest of five. Mm-hmm. Yeah. How did that happen? Because I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but every one of you have pretty heavy merits. Like, all of you have pretty heavy, you've won, nationals, you've won...
Yeah.
like Olympics and of course Freeride World Tour and stuff. So how come you all ended up being this ambitious and full of talent when it comes to snowboarding?
So our parents have 5 kids. I'm the youngest one. I have a sister which is in the middle, and my older brother is like 12 years older than me, and we all grew up in the Pyrenees in Saint-Lary in a village, yeah, in a ski resort, and our parents had a ski and snowboard shop, so they were working like their ass off like every day.
Of course, yeah, tourist season,
24/7, like all the time. They were owner of the shop, so big time working. And I guess they were earning pretty well their life, and they were just letting us doing what we want. For example, if we wanted to go like to for a week in the Alps to train, like they could afford to pay it because they were working really hard. And I don't know, we got like pretty good at it. I know, like when I was a kid, my older brother were like being very good at the competition, and every weekend they were traveling with the Brown Bears, with the club from Saint-Lary, and they were winning all the competitions, and so it was really a good vibe to see them coming back every on Sunday night every weekend, and like having like I could feel they had the best weekend traveling with their friends. Everyone was killing it, and then from there they kept on going, and me, I had my brother as inspiration for sure, and kind of way went the same way.
And you've never been skiing?
I was skiing until I was maybe 11. I got my first snowboard when I was 6. Then from 6 to 11, I was a bit doing both, bringing my snowboard, my skis to the resort. I was usually going to the ski club and managing to bring my snowboard, and then right after the ski club I would put my snowboard on, and at some point at 11 I think I got sponsored by I don't know if it was Burton or Burton probably at that age, and then I was I just put the skis back to the,
and you'd never opened that closet again.
Yeah, to the closet. Yeah, and just maybe once every 2 or 3 years, I do one day of skiing. Like, I have the worst style ever, but it's super fun to go like fast with the worst style. And no control, for sure.
No control, exactly. Could you tell me a bit about the community, kind of, because you started racing as well, like you did half pipe freestyle?
So first I was a part of the club from Les Brown Bears in the from my ski resort in Saint-Lary, and then I got a part, I was doing good at the competition, so then I was traveling with the Pyrenean group. We're traveling to the French championships, French cups and whatever, and then so that was another community. Like, I had such a good vibe with everybody, we were having so much fun, and then I had the I had some sponsors, and then they asked me sometimes to go to some shootings, but I was as well doing some competitions, but at some point it was at the same time, so at some point I had to choose, okay, should I go to the shooting or to the competition? And at some point I was like, okay, let's just do what I like the most, which was making videos, making shootings and stuff, and writing the kind of stuff I really liked. So I went this way, and I kind of stopped competing, yeah.
And that came, like, came very early for you, that you had to make these kinds of decisions, like, between choosing between competing or working with sponsors and everything. You were just a teenager then.
Yeah, I had to choose when I was, I don't know, from 12, 13, like, more and more I had to make this decision, because at the beginning I had one shooting event in a season, and then a bunch of competition, and at some point I just changed. I had more and more shooting and less competition because I had less time, and then at some point I just dropped the competition and went just full on for what I loved the most and where I was best at as well. And because filming, you just go out there and you just hit whatever you want, when you want, with the condition you like, so you can really express yourself. And because in the competitions, it was just park. And so being less creative, it was just about the trick and not...
Yeah,
so I was just better and I enjoyed way much more the filming. And as well, it was pretty cool to go with the crew in the backcountry, learning so much about filming, building jumps, how to make good shots. And I really enjoyed that. And then you have the premiere tour then. You made a movie, you worked your ass off for for a year, and then you go to crazy places with your really good friends you've been shooting all winter, and you present the movie, and then you travel, and it was amazing years.
A good feeling.
Yeah, for sure.
And I guess for like all those decisions and all those kind of career moves, you had your older brothers, for instance, to look up to. Did you ask them for advice? Did they tell you, like, Victor, think about this? I think you should do this instead of that, and so on? Or have you always been, like, just following kind of your heart?
Yeah, I've always been following my heart and doing what I wanted to do and not doing what I should do. But sometimes I had maybe some question, and for sure I know I can ask them anytime what they think, and they would answer and giving me their point of view, and that would help to make a decision sometimes. For example, one year I know Polo and Xavier went to the Olympics, and I was like, oh, maybe now slopestyle is at the Olympics. Maybe I should try to qualify, and then we would be three brothers. And so they thought it was a good idea. There were one of them, especially Polo, was really psyched about it because, yeah, he loves the Olympics and the competition part of snowboarding. But and as well, my sponsors were really stoked about it. They were pushing for it. But at some point, so I was trying to compete, to qualify. But at some point, I had big video project opportunities as well. And in December, I was like, I had to choose. And I was like, yeah, fuck the competition. Anyway, I'm not that good. And that's not what I really want to do, really dream to do. And I don't think I will be that great. And I have this video opportunity I want to go for full on, and I don't want to miss that. And that's what I did. And honestly, I don't regret anything.
Never looked back and wanted to do something different.
Super stoked on all the choices I took so far.
But I mean, growing up with friends and especially family like that, I mean, that must kind of, don't get me wrong, but it must in some ways kind of give you a twisted view on what talent is and what skill is, because everybody in your family are very talented when it comes to snowboarding. And did you have like a moment where you like at a certain age when you started think of like, hey, we are exceptionally good, like we're damn good, like, you know what I mean?
I never told myself, oh, we are so damn good.
Maybe you should.
but for sure, watching at my older brothers, you know, they're all my older brothers, so for sure I admire all of them. And I know they are good in their sports, but when I was a kid, I didn't know exactly what they were doing. I just know, like, hey, they're all going out there, winning everything, killing it, having so much fun. And I just want to have the same life, yeah. Like going there, having fun. And I know it's possible to make from this passion your livings. So I think all my older brothers for sure inspired me. And then all that, what they were doing, winning the competitions and doing good movies and stuff, I don't know, it just seemed kind of normal in a way. Or I've seen like all the movies of Xavier, but I know every time there's a new movie coming out, I know it's going to be like a rad shit. So you watch it and you're like, it gets normal, you know, in a way. And so you see bunch of footage, crazy lines. And then after a while, you're like, yeah, this is just how it is. And if you push yourself, you get to this level. So I guess you're... if I want to go out there and film, I know that my expectations are super high because I don't want to do something like 10 times shittier than what my brother has done. So my expectation is for sure pretty high. Yeah.
Did you make long-term plans, or like, did you think, okay, so in 5 years I want to have done this and that, and in order to get there I need to work with these people and those people?
For me it's really difficult to think like more than 1 year ahead every time, like, okay, from April to September I try to think of what I'm gonna do the next season, and I try to make some plans and make them happen. And then I put all my energy in this plan, in this season, to make most of this season and to achieve the goals that I have set. But then I never set goals like more than 1 year.
And it's still the same?
Yeah, still the same. Maybe more and more I will be able to see like maybe long terms. But so far I've done like this. I had, for example, the opportunity of working with Standard Films the first year when I was a kid. I was like, well, okay, let's try to have the best video part. And then it worked super good. Then the year after, okay, this year absent, let's try to kill it. And then I had like the ender and the cover of the movie. And then, yeah, year after year it was like this. 1 year I went to shoot, I had the opportunity to shoot with Travis Rice for the fourth phase. So I was like, okay, let's try to do good again. It worked pretty good. And so this year I have, I'm just trying a new challenge. I got like a wild card for the Fred World Tour, and I'm just going to try to do good. We'll see how that goes. And I see year by year, and it works fine for me like this.
Looking at your background, like competing in border cross, slope style, half pipe, in a way, it would be like the perfect way to build up like this, if you want to create a really good mountain rider, big mountain rider, that's a pretty damn good background to have. All these like technical parts that you get from all these disciplines, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what made you, in the end, what made you take the step, and maybe, I guess, in a way following your older brother, Xavier, in a way, into like the kind of big mountain part of the free ride?
Well, I think it's super natural, actually. And as a kid, like, you don't care about the free riding. You just want to go in the park, have fun, learn the new trick. I even remember when it was powder in my home resort, like, some of my friends were telling me, yeah, let's go ride some powder. I was like, no, I want to go and do this trick and then go ride the park and etc. They were like, are you crazy or whatever? And then now I'm like, if there's powder, there is no way I'm going to go to the park. You know, just with the age or with the tree or with the experience you get, I don't know, you want to just to learn something new and get to, you have different motivations and you're looking for some different, kind of stuff in life. And I guess, so as a kid, it was more like park, border cross, and then it was like going into the backcountry and making some big kickers and making some tricks and filming. And then,
but you didn't really hike up all the way up to the summit. You kind of hiked 100 meters to do a kicker, and
We were like wandering in the resort with the snowshoes and
looking for features.
Good spots. And then we could like shape for 2 days straight, like even on bluebird days, super frustrating. Like, actually, you don't ride that much when you do this. And then you have your perfect setup and you try to make the best trick and best footage possible. But then at some point, then I went to Alaska riding. So this was like a big new step for me, like free riding, riding big lines, lots of powder, big slough, etc. And now I do in the summer as well a bit of paragliding, a bit of climbing. So I get more knowledge, you know, and then now I'm more attracted to big lines in big alpine environment where you need to hike, climb, then you need to take your ice axe to go up and your crampons. So I think it's just with age you have different motivation and new skills, and now I try to use all my skills. And for example, this year we did a sick line in Chamonix that you can see from the bottom. It's a crazy hanging glacier. that has no exit. It just ends up on a crazy, huge hanging glacier or serac. And then, I had the idea to bring my super light paraglide, and then I took off from there. So that was the perfect exit. So, you get more knowledge and you put them all together, and this is how you create a cool profile. And that's what I like about my snowboarding, pretty much.
But going to Alaska, was that kind of a big milestone for you, like a big eye opener when you got to ride the Alaska Spines and whatnot? Like that was like then and there you made a big decision to this is what I will be doing.
So the first year when I went to Alaska, it was for sure a big thing for me, because it was the first year I was shooting for a big production, Standard Films. So it was like a big step forward. And so my brother Xavier was as well in this production, and we say, okay, let's go to Alaska this year. And it was more his idea, and I was like, ooh, holy shit, okay, let's let's do this. And as well, it was a lot of big investment for myself, because I had to put all the money down on the table, like in December already for Christmas time. I remember we're having this conversation, it was a big step, big move, and then it worked so well. I was just with him, like in a crew, and we had like amazing time. We killed it, and then from there it was pretty much game on. And I went year after year, and then on my own with different people, and then it was more maybe myself showing the people around there in Alaska. So it was. It was cool.
But I guess, your brother, he would not have invited you if he didn't know that you were ready for it, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Like you knew that you could trust him. Like, okay, so if he wants me to go, he thinks I'm ready for it and I can do it.
Yeah, definitely. So if he proposed me to go there with him, he knew like I had the skills and the mindset to do it. So. But for sure, it was pretty nice from him, because if you bring someone, I was pretty young, maybe 18 or so. So, you know, you need to take care of your little brother and make sure he doesn't go and walk over the big cornice and or get caught in a big avalanche or riding terrain with exposed rocks under or big cliffs or whatever. So for him, it was a big... It was, I think, a bit stressful, because he had to take care about himself, his line, his decision. But even more important, to take care about my decision, watching from a side angle that I was not doing some too much bullshit and making sure every time I was making correct decision. And so it was a bit stressful. I remember the first day we went out there, we got dropped on a big AK lines. So we get dropped, we jump from the chopper on top of the line.
Just you and Shady?
Yeah, yeah. And then poof, the clouds showed up. So he helped me to go to the top of my line. He was a, big cornice, super like steep, so technical to access to the line. So he brings me there. Okay, I'm on top of my line. We kind of cut the cornice a little bit, but I cannot move anymore, because it's like if you move, maybe the cornice will break, or maybe you can fall from the other side. So you just sit and really don't move. And then my brother goes to his line, which was maybe like 60 meters or so away, but it was a mountain between us, so we couldn't see each other. And then we were waiting for the good weather to come back, but we were just waiting like I don't know, 20 minutes waiting. It was horrible. And as well, he told me, hey, we go to Alaska, so maybe you should try to ride a bigger board. So he gave me one of his board, which was huge, and I just put my binding randomly on there.
That was the first time rode that board?
Yeah. So then, okay, skies gets a little bit clearer, so he goes, so I don't see his start, but I just see him like tumbling, like boom 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 boom, all the bottom of the line. I'm like, holy shit, okay, but, well, he's fine, he waits for me at the bottom, and me, I go, and then after already 2 meters, I was already like in my white room. I couldn't see where I was going. I had to stop. Then I was like, okay, fuck it, let's go. I went I had such a weird feeling on this board that I never rode before. And then like a couple meters after, it was just a roller. I kind of freaked out as well because I wasn't sure that behind this roller it was clear. So I was like, I stopped again, and then we were like, damn it, what a shitty first day. So we went back home like this day and we say, okay, let's stop for today. And we'll try to start again, start more mellow, and then grow up every day, like make bigger and bigger lines and start easy at first. And that's what we've done. And then we just really killed it and we had a really good time.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Like becoming so mentally strong. I mean, sitting there for 20 minutes, it must have been, you must have been freaked out.
Yeah, it's pretty scary because you know you cannot move, so then your legs are cold, and then, yeah, you have this weird
staring
feeling.
Staring down this, yeah.
And then, yeah, just a weird feeling, and then with the pressure of the helicopter, the pressure of waiting for the clouds, the pressure of watching your brother tumbling down a mountain, yeah. The pressure of having a different board, and the pressure of not knowing how to make a turn into like a narrow spine pillow, whatever. And well, it was like a bit of a disaster for first day, but then we started over again, as I said. We went easy, and then we got like, yeah, we had a really amazing trip then.
How did it feel like, I guess a couple of years before that, when you first saw the clips and the movies coming out that Xavier was doing, what did you think when you saw the lines that he did?
So when he first did all his videos and crazy AK runs and stuff, I was pretty young. I was like a lot into snowboarding, but not into freestyle, not into freeride. So I could just see that my brother was killing it, making amazing footage, riding insane AK lines. But I had trouble to see like all the details and see how exposed it was. Or I don't know, it just seemed always easy for my brother. He was just charging and killing it. And that was pretty much it. I didn't see all the details.
Because it's so difficult to kind of relate to it.
Yeah. And that's what I realized maybe last year, that actually even the people from the snowboarding market, they don't even see the details on all the lines we do. You really need to be like really specific and to almost have been there already to understand the choice of the line and to understand the way, why did he ride it this way or not this way. And because once I... So this year we did a movie called Frozen Mine, but the year before I went with a skier from Red Bull, which is French, called Richard Permin, went to Alaska. And so I was trying to organize this trip, and I really wanted to try to explain people how to scope a line and to, yeah, how to make decision. And I was I was watching an Alaska snowboard movie in a film festival with a French friend from a snowboarding industry, and he was telling me, "But oh my God, it's always the same." For him, all the lines were the same, and me, I was like, "No, this is different because of this, this, this." So this is why I wanted to try to explain other people more in detail how subtle it was.
Yeah. This might be a big question, but would you say that your life and your career in snowboarding has been kind of a long, steady progression into where you are today? Or have you done any? Because I could also guess that, for instance, that first line in Alaska, that was kind of a big milestone and kind of a big obstacle.
Yeah,
like all of a sudden it's like, whoa, I'm weighing over my head almost. Like this was something new.
Yeah, it's all about building up for sure.
Yeah, but would you say that you have done many obstacles like that, or was that like the biggest one so far?
So the big one was like going to Alaska for the first time, not making it work good the first day, and then go back and build up and feel more and more comfortable. Then I remember a couple years later, I went back to Alaska and I rode like a pretty big line because I know my brother Xavier, for example, rode it 1 year, so I know it was possible. So I rode this one, and then
the
I was
hotel
like,
room.
Yeah, for example. And I was like, wow, okay, so I've done this one, so now I rode this crazy line. I know I could ride this even a bit bigger line that I would have never watched before. Even though I was at the bottom, I would have watched some small feature on the side to ride, but never the big line. So for sure, you educate your eye to watch the mountain in a different way, depending on the experience you have, what you have done, and what you rode. And then you just build up. And then 1 year I went to Chamonix, one of my friend Pierre Ortic, which I made the movie Frozen Mind with. He told me, yeah, come to Chamonix, I show you my playground. You should try steep riding, you will see it's fun. So I was like, okay, I go with him. So the first day we go on one of the steep run. Oh, pretty fun with the rope, everything. And then like 3 days later, we go onto a crazy run, like under the cables of the Aiguille du Midi, which is like a thousand, maybe 200 vertical drop. Super gnarly. And we did that. We had amazing condition, crazy powder. And so that was like for sure, like I was discovering a new sport pretty much. Mm. So that was another huge achievement. And this year we were like, okay, let's try to focus 2.5 months in Chamonix when it's the best time of the year, from mid-March to end of May, and let's try to make a movie out of it. And so that's what we've done last year, and we came out the movie Frozen Mind.
Yeah.
And so I learned so much, and it was great.
Would you say like that type of writing is it any like technical obstacles, like that did you feel that you had to learn a new way of riding or adapting your ride? Was that a big thing, or is the biggest thing always the mental? I mean, because you've been snowboarding since you were like 5, 6, 7 years old, so I guess, I mean, deep inside you know that you can handle anything they throw at you, you know that you can ride it. But then again, I guess the mental game, like that part must be.
Yeah. So the biggest thing in those steep skiing into big steep line, glacier line, where you know that under the snow it's ice and everything, then you need to do rappels, maybe sometimes Abalakoff, which are rappels into ice. It's more about experience and knowledge and know how to get out of a situation more than technicals. Yeah. But sometimes you have like some, for example, this year we did a cool line called the Frendo. It's a big, like 1,200 meters run as well, which can get ridden very rarely. Like maybe it was good like 1 year, 1 day this year. And last
when
year,
the snow sticks.
Yeah. And this year, last year, no one did it, for example. And at some point, we had to actually cross a piece of ice.
Yeah.
And for this, yeah, you needed some experience and as well some technique, like know how to ride ice and let yourself carry it and then stop a bit later on. And yeah.
Because you're right, because you can see that in the movie in Frozen Mind, and you ride with the ice axes in both your hands and everything, and that's But would you that's more mentally challenging, or is it like technical challenging for your riding? Like
to have the ice axe?
No,
or to...
I mean yeah, to be able to traverse that type of terrain. Would you say that it's just a mental thing?
It's about
staying cool and like make yourself relax and don't tighten up and don't.
So this traverse, for example, against the ice we were talking about before accessing to the Frendo, it's for sure a mental game and experience game, because you know, like, okay, it's super easy. I can cross there. It's just 2 meters of ice. I just get some speed, put my board flat, wait, and then I know, like, just before it's going to be good snow, I will be able to stop. So you need to go fast to be able to cross easy. Because if you go slow and you slip on the ice, then you just fall down on a crazy couloir full of ice, which it's death for sure, like 500%. Yeah. And but there's as well the experience of being able to put your board flat. And there's as well the fact of telling yourself, yeah, for sure, it goes. I've done it already. No big deal. Stay calm and do it. And yeah. So this was an option. Or the other option was like, okay, there's a piece of ice. Okay, let's put the rope. So you take the rope out, make it clean, find a way to put an ice screw. So clean the snow, find some ice. Okay, clip the rope. Then go little by little, then you would lose 1 hour.
Yeah.
So and then in mountaineering, it's a lot like this. You need to earn as much time as possible every time, because it's so easy to lose like 10 minutes here, 10 minutes here, 10 minutes here, and then you just end up your day too late at nighttime, and then you have
that's
more...
That's dangerous as well.
Yeah, it's super dangerous because you're more exposed to the
sun
serax.
Yeah. The heating up all the...
Yeah, to the serax. If you're under serax, they can fall down to you. Or exactly as you said, it can the sun can get warmer and affect some cornices, which can fall and create avalanche that falls to you. Or it can just warm up a little bit some rocks where there is a tiny bit of snow on them. So this just falls a little bit, but then it brings a bit more snow, which is called slough. Which, if that touch you, you go down with it. So, yeah, the faster in mountaineering, the better. And, yeah, what you want is to get down and finish, as we say in the movie.
But this relationship with fear, how would you describe your relationship with fear? Like, don't you ever freeze up or, you know?
If I freeze up, for example, if I'm on top of like a 1,000 meter cliff, I try to go look through the edge. For sure, I'm gonna freeze and I'm gonna be like, oh, I hate this. In a way, I love it. In the other way, I hate it. But you know, what I like to do in everyday life is to push my limits and to try something I haven't done before. And so you start with being next to a 10-meter cliff, you feel okay, then a 50-meter cliff, and then,
gradually build up.
Yeah, build up for anything in life like this, new challenge every day, and then you get used to stuff, and that's how you feel more comfortable and how you can access to more crazier terrain, I guess. And
because that's also what I'm interested in, this relationship, because you need to manage... You need to find a balance between knowing where your limits are, knowing, okay, I can do, but this I cannot do. So find a balance between this, knowing your limitations, but also you need to cross your limitations as well. sometimes you need to kind of expand that zone all the time.
So you push your limit daily, but you know it's scary, but you know you can do it. But you're not going to go like, okay, let's try this, which is way over the top of what you've been doing before, and you don't know how it's going to be. You need to, before going to do something new, you need to try to mentalize it and know like, okay, this part I'm going to do like this, here I'm going to do like that. I know how to do this rope manipulation, whatever. And then you're like, okay, I can do it. But if it's like way too much difficult and you don't have all the elements in your hands and you don't know how to face this situation, well, then maybe it's not a good decision to go.
But are you good in that? Are you good in like turning down? And also what kind of mindset do you want, like going into a project like that? What do you want to feel like in your head? And how difficult for you, or how easy is it for you to kind of back down, like, okay, so I'm not writing this today?
For me, anyway, I'm just writing stuff or going to places where I feel confident, and I'm like, okay, it's going to be a bit scary, but let's do it. But I'm not going to go do something I don't feel I'm able to do. So the decision is pretty easy for me to say it's a yes or it's a no-go. It's pretty easy, I guess. Sometimes it's a bit terrifying when you need to go to a new place, for example, in high alpine. But I have confidence with the people I'm with. And if it's like a friend, which is a guide who has been there already and knows my skills and tells me, yes, for sure you can do it, I trust my friend and I'm like, okay, let's do it. You know, so if I know exactly the situation, I can decide, yes, I can do it or not. But if I don't know exactly what's going to happen the next day or whatever, or what's the mountain to climb or whatever, and a friend bring me, they will tell me, and I trust them and they trust me. So this is how we find a decision if it's a good idea or not.
Yeah, because projects like these are very rarely something that you do solo. It's almost all the time like you're doing it as a team.
Exactly. Yeah, you need to be roped up. Yeah. You need to be roped up to a friend. Well, some people do it solo, but it's a way different level of skills and yeah, it's a different sport, I would say.
The kind of the dark side of this world is, of course, the fact that it's people disappear, people die. There can be like tragedies in the mountains, like no matter how good you are. How does that affect you? Because I'm sure that you have many close friends that's no longer here with us. So how does that perspective affect you? And how do you handle news like that?
If you're in extreme terrain, if you spend some time in extreme terrain, like alpine, whatever, being in places where you have seracs that can fall into you, if you are in places where there's potential avalanche danger, if there is potential crevasse danger where you need to cross some snow bridges, whatever. The more time you go out there, the more you get experienced. But the more experience you have, the more of your chance you've used and the less chance you get. So it's pretty much you have one glass full of experience, of chance at the beginning, and another one full empty of experience, and then little by little you drop your chance into the experience, and then at some point you're losing your chance, you have more experience. But yeah, so that was something that Geraldine Fastna told to my brother Polo, and Polo told me, so I think it's pretty true.
Yeah,
so the more time you spend out there in the mountain, the more you get to know the places, the more you know the conditions, the snow stability, and all the hazards. But in a way, you are always a little bit in danger, And so at some point, you have more chance to fall in a crevasse if you traverse it 100 times instead of if you just traverse it once.
But you can still... you have never thought of changing direction or doing something else because someone that you know like is gone.
Not really. No, I live my life to the fullest, and I try to make a good decision, not too stupid if possible, and try to get as much experience as possible. But not, I don't want to spend every single day on a glacier, like, because I know this is going to be crazy. I rather spend like a bit less time, but be super focused and take right, correct decisions. And
When do you get when do you get the most impressed by yourself? Like, have you done something, or would you say that you do something that makes you extra proud?
Snowboarding wise, no, I don't get super extra proud of myself, but it's super satisfying to go out there in crazy places and make good snowboarding and to be able to make cool footage and watch the footage afterwards. This is like a really a teamwork. You go, you choose your filmer, you have a good vibe, you know how they film, how they work. And then sometimes you don't even need to talk and you do the right thing, the filmer does the right thing, and then you end up having amazing footage. And this is like pretty satisfying to create something out of nothing, and that's what I like to do. Yeah. So I'm not getting impressed by it, but I like it.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's a satisfaction knowing that you've done a good job.
Yeah, and you created something. It's my hobby and it's my job, so it's perfect.
So when do you get disappointed of yourself?
When I ride like shit, sometimes it happens. Maybe in the beginning of the season, you feel, oh my God, but I don't even know how to snowboard. Sometimes, for example, right now, it's end of November, and I'm like, I need to go to the park, do some tricks, but I don't even know how to do those tricks anymore. But actually, I'm going to go there,
try, suck at the
beginning, and then ride more and more, feel more comfortable, and then it's going to come back.
What would you say your strength as a snowboarder is?
My diversity, I guess. I know how to do like bunch of different style stuff. Freestyle, free ride, a bit of mountaineering, a bit of climbing, a bit of paragliding. And this is what I like about snowboarding. It's to be able to mix all those opportunities, sports and skills, and try to make something more unique and more special.
Yeah. And speaking about unique... you are here in Stockholm to show Frozen Mind, the movie that we've already touched upon. Is that the first movie where you take a bigger like creative role as well?
So 1 year ago, we did a movie called Sweet and Sour. First time I was doing a movie with... it was the first time I was doing pretty much... my own movie with Richard Perman, but he was more involved into the producing side of making a movie. But this year I made pretty much more my own movie with my friend Pierre Ortier, where I was the co-producer. And so it was like really, really cool to be able to do like what you want, choose your filmer, choose the people you want to work with, go to the places you like, when you like, and this is how you end up making a movie that reflects you like to the fullest. And this is what I'm actually proud of being able to do. Yeah, if you're doing a good job, it's because you've worked hard, but if the movie sucks, it's your fault as well. So you need to put the energy to make it the way you want to be.
And I mean, that's same as riding a line, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Same instant reward, kind of.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So now making a movie is as well another step into my snowboarding career, pretty much. It's like producing, but not just producing snowboarding content. It's producing a snowboarding movie. It's a bit bigger. Then you need to take care of the distribution, the production, the editing. So it's getting more and more complex, but super interesting. Stoked to learn new stuff and to get experience in different kind of ways.
Reading about you, people like very often focus on this, that you have that your style of riding, where you really combine kind of slopes, the slope style, but you're adding it to the free ride terrain, natural features and so on. Would you say that this is a strong current trend within snowboarding and skiing at the moment? Like where the two worlds kind of meet up?
I think this is what every snowboarder would like to watch, is like a good freestyler being a super good free rider and being able to mix both, you know? Because back in the day, it was more like pure free riders, super gnarly guys. Then we had the super freestyle guys. And now, for sure, the trend is try to mix both, and not that many people have the skills and experience to do both. So that's what I'm trying to do. And what I'm trying to do is even to do like freestyle into like not free ride, but even more like even more extreme terrain, if it's possible.
Yeah.
And that's where I'm trying to go.
And that type of style and that type of riding, it's, I'm guessing that it's perfect for Free Ride World Tour now. Mm-hmm. Like you mentioned, you got a wild card for that. How does that feel going back to competing? And what do you have? What kind of expectations do you have on yourself? And I guess that a lot of people will have, a lot of people outside will have a lot of expectations on you. And how does it feel to handle all that?
For me, it's my first year. I never done any competition in free riding, so I just want to go see how it goes and then see from there. For sure, I would like to try to bring all my freestyle into like lines and try to make it cool to watch and do some tricks and charge as well. But the only problem is the format of the competition so far. If you want to do good in the overall of the competition, you need to. They keep 4 results out of 5, so I know if some guys want to do good, they can ride easy all the year, and then they ended up in a good rating at the end of the winter. But I think this sucks. They should just maybe take 3 of the best scores out of 5. So like this, you can just send it and try crazy stuff all year long, and just the best will end up there and count.
Yeah.
So.
But will you do all stops?
Yeah, we'll do 5 stops. Well, it's 4 stops. They take the 3 out of 4. And if you're in top 6, you go to Verbier, to the final.
Yeah.
And
also Alaska, yeah?
No Alaska anymore.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, now it's okay. Japan, Canada, Austria, Andorra. And then if you're qualified, you go to Verbier.
Do the extreme.
Yeah.
But do you care about... Because I'm guessing a lot of people... Like if you would go into internet forums, a lot of people would be like, yeah, Victor is gonna smash it and he's gonna like win it all and everything. And like people put a lot of expectations in you. Do you get bothered by that or don't you care?
I imagine some people would have some expectation. I just want to go and do the first competition and just see how it goes, and then. Then I will see. For sure, I have a good expectation for myself. I want to do good, but I don't put that much pressure.
It's about staying humble.
Yeah, just I want to ride good and do cool stuff. If it works, perfect. If it doesn't, whatever. We'll see.
So when is your first day on the board for this season? Do you have it set yet?
It will be... December 1st, I guess.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, so tomorrow, tonight we have a premiere in Stockholm of Frozen Mind, tomorrow in Chamonix, and then the next day I go back home in Val Thorens, and hopefully I'll get my season pass and be able to start snowboarding.
Thank you so much for taking your time.
Thank you.
Best of luck for the season.
All right. Appreciate it.
Husky is produced in cooperation with Naturkompaniet. The music is made by Joel Mull.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.